Hello and welcome to the Day Zero update for October 18th, 2015. I am Filippo Genolfo.
I'm Patrick Mifflin.
I'm Brandon Perkins.
And I'm Lee Lamb.
And man, we got some interesting stuff to talk about today. I mean, we've got, yes, we do. Yeah, we got stuff to look forward to, stuff to not look forward to, paying for games after you've paid for games.
You get to hear me talk about something.
Yeah, extensively. But
I showed up.
Yeah, Lee's here.
And, connection still being Comcastic?
Well, we've called and yelled at Comcast a couple of times. It's been dropping during the week when we're working, which is no bueno.
No bueno.
No bueno. So, especially it's the worst time of the year for us at my job. So, like, even being down for like 20 minutes is enough to make me want to jump out the window face first. Like, no, like I had plans for those 20 minutes.
Yeah. Well, you could, play some of the original Deus Ex while you're down there, because there is now a fan-made remaster of the original PC version of Deus Ex. You can download it as a mod for the Steam version or the GOG version. And the changes it makes are, pretty substantial. They add new music, high-resolution textures, they do some interface tweaks. It's a really comprehensive mod that if you own the original Deus Ex and you kind of haven't wanted to replay it because it's butt ugly at this point. Well, this might be a good way to get back into it.
Gameplay wise, it holds up in some few ways. Visually,
not so much.
No.
It's always interesting to look at those games that came out like between like the PlayStation 1 and the PlayStation 2 era, and just like that sort of like corridor of like, what was it, like 95 to like 2001, 2002, where looking at that stuff now has you going, I thought this looked good.
Back then, maybe, I don't know, we weren't so discerning.
It was new. Like, I remember being blown away. Like, I knew Final Fantasy VII didn't look that great, like, when you're walking around. Yeah. But, like, the battles and everything, like, oh, these look pretty good. And then, like, even just the jump between that and Final Fantasy VIII, like, if you go back and try to play Final Fantasy VII now, it looks like something my child would create.
Pretty much. Yeah.
Like, yeah, with the graphics and the overworld and everything, it's pretty bananas.
Yeah.
It was pretty bad, but, well, it was new back
then. The backgrounds still look pretty damn good, though, even though they're just, like, animated GIFs.
Yeah.
I will admit, there is a certain charm about those pre-rendered backgrounds that holds up.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is about it, but... Mm.
And well, if you want to play Final Fantasy VII again, now you can get it on your iPhone. So
yeah,
that's how far we've come. It was a console game back in the day, and now you can play it on your phone.
And strangely enough, it looks better on the iPhone.
Go figure.
Right?
Yeah. So, what have you guys been playing this week?
I've still been on NHL 16. Finally got a steady NHL run. For my custom player, don't know if it's going to last, but so far so good.
Is it harder to get into the NHL this year than it has been?
Oh, yes. Last week I told you what happened the first time I got called up.
Yeah.
That wasn't cool.
No.
But, it took me probably a good 15 games or so in the minors before I got called back up, maybe even 20. And so I got called up again, and I seem to be sticking on the main roster. So, hopefully we don't get this whole rash of players coming back from injury again and me just getting squoze out of the depth chart. But
yeah,
I've been picking up assists in pretty much every game I've played in the NHL. So
hopefully
this is going to stick.
Yeah. Yeah, hopefully review forthcoming at some point.
Yeah, I'm working on it, I promise. Final Fantasy XIV, Heaven's Ward. Still at level 55, but not for much longer. This is one of those games I know I'm into for the long haul. I don't really do a whole lot of MMOs. What I do is I just pick one and just kind of latch onto it for years and years and years. steadily. And this is definitely going to be one of those. I mean, I've been playing it since A Realm Reborn launched, and they still keep finding ways to keep me glued to it. Mm-hmm. On the fighting game front, it was Killer Instinct Season 2, and I've actually gotten back into DOA 5 last round.
Yeah.
So,
did you opt for the Falcom costume pack?
No, I saw the price tag and wanted to void myself.
Yeah, well, this is the problem.
I think you can unlock all those normally, can't you?
No, you cannot.
Oh, well, that sucks.
Yeah, this is the big problem with the DOA games, you know, lately is the DLC is basically just cosmetic costumes, and you know, it doesn't affect gameplay. There's no real reason to spend the money on it unless you absolutely have to have that costume.
No, I don't.
Yeah. It just, there's no real.
Like, the ones I would actually use aren't there. So. Yeah.
And it's like, you know, there's no lasting value to it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Especially when you get, when they offer like a $90 costume pack. That's awesome. But anyway.
I don't know. It's one of those games I really feel like I want to put some time into, but there are so many other games that I need to put time into that I'm not sure if it's going to stick, you know?
Yeah, well, I mean, you've got...
I know that feeling.
You got KI and MK10, which are, you know, turning into actual things now.
Yeah.
So, you know. Plus Street Fighter V just around the corner.
Yeah, and once that game's out, that's just going to dominate everything. So,
yeah,
like I've already got it pretty much figured out. Once Street Fighter V gets here, don't make any plans.
Yeah.
What about you?
Well, I've been actually playing Rock Band 4.
So, yeah, no shit.
Yeah, instead of downloading songs, although I have been doing quite a bit of that lately, just new songs now. I'm really liking it. You know, it is bare bones because they basically had to just rebuild the entire game from scratch because of some interesting legal situations that the previous games were under.
Yeah.
So there was that. But yeah, it's bare bones, but the framework is there. It's solid. It's still fun. It's just missing a lot of features that they're going to be adding over time.
Yeah.
And it's really weird, as we're going to talk later about, you know, microtransactions, that this is a game that's pretty much entirely based on microtransactions that I'm completely okay with. So, yeah. You know.
Really.
It's done right.
Yeah.
Yeah, it works better here. And, you know, well, the thing is, with a game like this, it kind of makes sense.
Yeah, because you're getting actual content for your money.
Yeah. That's true.
Yeah,
so, and it's one of those times when microtransactions are being built to actually continually build on a game rather than just
try to shaft you for more and more money.
Here's some chunk of extra stuff we couldn't be fucked to give you with the cost of admission.
Yeah. Or even worse, they, you know, lock stuff behind another type of currency, and then they charge you real money to buy that currency so you can get at that stuff, you know. And,
yeah, basically.
Yeah, so. Candy Crush.
And, well, more stuff we'll be talking about later. Beyond the fact that I'm starting to get a handle on the freestyle solos in Rock Band 4, which is, that's actually going to take some skill and some getting used to make something sound actually pretty good. So at least they've got a skill-based element in there now. Well, I mean, the whole game is skill-based, but this is a little bit more where you can stretch your creative creative mind and do what you want.
Now, do the old peripherals work?
Yes, they do. On the Xbox One, you need an adapter to make them
well,
work.
Of
on the
course
PS-
you do.
Yeah, on the PS4, they just work.
Okay, cool. Yeah, because my wife bought Rock Band years ago on the PS3, and we never really did anything with it, but I still have everything here.
Yeah.
That was mainly because hooking anything up to the PlayStation 3 was a huge pain in the ass with where it is in my entertainment center.
Yeah.
But now that I know that we could, okay.
Yeah.
Now, what about like, or is any of this? I know the DLC is transferable, right?
Right.
But like, if I own physical discs for stuff, that doesn't matter. It's not like with the Xbox where I could pop in a disc and it'll download a version of the game or something, right? There's nothing for me. Like if I have like Beatles Rock Band or something, I can't import those tracks.
Beatles Rock Band, no. But the ones that will transfer into Rock Band 4 eventually, and that's, I'm talking December here, is Rock Band 1, Rock Band 2, Green Day, AC/DC, Lego, and what was the other ones? The three or four track packs that came out.
Wow.
Those are exportable, and you'll be able to just get those in to Rock Band 4 when they get the import tool.
That will make my wife very happy, because I think she always felt for a while that she wasted her money, and it wasn't that. It was just that I wasn't, you know, again, where we have the PlayStation hooked up and everything, wasn't working.
If you've if she had Rock Band 3, you know, and had a bunch of her, like, if she did the disc exports for the previous ones, or I don't know if you started with Rock Band 3 or wherever. But yeah, if you did the disc exports, they will just appear on your account.
That's nice.
Yeah,
I like that.
Yeah, I like that too. So I need that. And besides that, I've also been playing around with the new Xbox One experience, also known as the Windows 10 update for the Xbox One.
Does it work yet?
Yeah, I was concerned last week, but they've actually released, in the interim, they've actually released two different builds. Yeah, it's getting there. So I'm not as, you know, horrified now, because it's functional. It actually looks really good. It's fast. Much faster than the original dashboard. It's still got some issues, though. It's like, you know, some of them are design-wise. So, like, if you go into and manage your games and you're looking for a particular piece of DLC, there's no real easy way to find it, because none of the DLC, you know, that's your DLC entries, they're just little squares with icons on them. Yeah. You don't get an actual label until you hover over them with your cursor.
Fantastic.
So that's you know, that's kind of a bit of a design flaw that I'm hoping they're going to address now that there's a lot of games. Well, there's a couple of games like DOA 5 Last Round, and particularly Rock Band 4, that kind of make use of a lot of DLC items. So we'll fix that. It still has a tendency of freezing and crashing apps sometimes, but hopefully they'll get that sorted out. The list of games and apps that don't quite work is getting shorter, so at least we got that going for us. But yeah, when you opt into this particular preview, they say, like, things will break, so, you know, be aware of that. So,
isn't it always fascinating, like, when you get into this sort of thing, like this, like the iterative nature that we're seeing with a lot of this stuff? Like, if you guys recall, during the Xbox 360, I mean, the product that it was when it launched was not the same as when it was pretty much done, right? Like, I mean, our dashboard, everything was completely different, and it feels like Microsoft, at least to me, with the Xbox One is it in its current incarnation, they just kind of pushed it out the door. Like, it's fascinating to me to look at the lack of features that the Xbox One had, like even like with like voice chat or like voice messages and stuff that were just part of the 360 that we were used to. And Sony did the same thing. Like, the PS4 is a far more inferior media player than the PlayStation 3 is. And it's always interesting to me, like just these little things, like what you were talking about, Phil, like, oh yeah, you have to mouse over it. Otherwise, it just doesn't tell you what it is. Like, that's one of those things where you just have to sit there and think, like,
it's like, nobody really made this. I mean, really?
Right. And, you know, I work for a company that deals with software, so I'm used to seeing that kind of thing, but it never ceases to just get to me to a certain extent, where it's like, this is designed by people who aren't actually using it. Because if they were, they'd realize how absolutely moronic something that simple is. Yeah. You know?
Yeah. Well, so usually with typical games, you know, you have maybe, you know, three or four at maximum. You might have 10 or 12 little items of DLC, you know, that it's not that big a deal to go through it and say, okay, I need to delete this one. when you got, like, in this case for Rock Band 4, when I've got like 450 mm-hmm. items in there.
Well, right, and you have these, and think about these, the way that they're tailoring games now. I mean, we're even Street Fighter V is going to be like this. You're going to get kind of like the initial pack, and then everything else is going to be add-ons.
Yeah.
So, I mean, everything is going the way of the MOBA, essentially, you know, and there's got to be better management for it.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I would almost compare the Xbox One to the PS3. In regards to how it was handled, because both of them were pretty much train wrecks when they launched.
Yeah.
We talked about, Lee, you just mentioned it getting pushed out the door. Well, in both cases, you had the guy who was basically the brains behind the system being pushed out the door not far after it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then they have the new guy come in one instance, Kaz Hirai, in another instance, Phil Spencer, tasked basically with fixing it.
Yeah.
And now that's kind of what the new Xbox One experience is going to be, a sort of relaunch.
Yeah, it should be called Xbox One, the unfucked experience.
Yeah,
yep.
It's being cleansed of the Don Matrick idea.
Yeah.
You know? And so, just like the... sort of how they relaunched the PS3 with the Slim and
yeah.
the new the rebranding with the old school logos and everything.
Yeah.
They cleansed it of Ken Kutaragi's ideas.
Yeah. Well, it's just so fascinating to me. Every third console always has this kind of stuff. Like, it's like the creators just get stupid and they're just like with the PlayStation 3, they were like, hey, no matter what we make, you're going to love it. You're going to love it so much you're going to get a second job. And people are like, yeah, all right, pal.
Yeah.
You know, and then, like, you see, like, the Xbox One, which, of course, is the third Xbox, and they just shit the bed. They went stupid.
Yeah.
You know, not insane, just they went stupid.
Yeah.
And there was no reason for it except that they did the same thing that Sony did. They thought that people would show up.
For
no matter what they did, and that would be enough.
Yeah.
And it's not. Mm. And so, and of course, Nintendo did it with the Nintendo 64. Yeah. You know, like, we don't care about this little upstart. You know, who's Sony? They can kiss our ass.
Yeah.
Oh my God, we're bleeding. We're bleeding. Oh my God.
Like, Nintendo never fixed it, though.
Yeah.
No, but it, yeah,
like,
but
the Nintendo, N64 never got its do-over.
Yeah.
No, it didn't.
You couldn't do it.
Nope. And you got to give you know, Microsoft credit. I think Microsoft pivoted in a way that no other console manufacturer really had done in such a short time frame. But I think that's also why we're sort of seeing this kind of weird schism with the way the system is and kind of where they want to direct it now. Because to your point, Pat, they are kind of like cleansing it. Like, I don't know if you guys saw the interview. It was a couple of days ago. I don't know when it was actually done, but it was at a conference, and Matrick just said, like, we – or not Matrick, but – oh, God. Phil Spencer basically said, like, look, you know, we lost the support of our most ardent supporters. And so – because they asked him point blank, like, are you ever going to catch up to the PlayStation 4? Oh, yeah, I remember this. And he said no. And he said, and the reason that we're not is because we're kind of in the middle of basically rebuilding what we screwed up.
Yeah.
And I thought that was a really interesting thing to hear from an executive, because that's not the kind of thing that you hear now. So it really makes me.
He's an honest dude, though.
Oh, no, he absolutely is. But isn't it crazy, though? Like, when you're hearing that, we would have never heard this 5 years ago to anybody.
Yeah,
nope.
It just wouldn't happen.
Yeah, this is a really interesting console generation in that, you know, there's a lot more transparency going on.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, and I think they're also, like, you know, they're addressing, or I think they're going to attempt to address some of the, in a lot of ways, not as severe, I would say, but in a lot of ways, it's interesting to me to see how Microsoft really took its success with the 360 and kind of almost had some Nintendo-like qualities as far as, like, the thing with the parity clause, where they're like, you look, you know, you have to, your system has to work the same way, or not, excuse me, not your system, but if you produce a game for us, you know, it's got to be something else. You got to add something to it that makes it unique. Like, I don't know if you guys have seen it, but Shovel Knight got canceled.
Yeah.
For the 360, the disc-based version.
Yeah.
And yep. from everybody's sort of unclear on it, but from everything that I'm reading, it's pretty much because I guess adding Battletoads was not enough.
Nope.
So, and that's one of those things like where this is going to be the kind of stuff, these little cuts essentially are going to be the thing that really continues to hurt them. Because, you know, we've talked so many times about indie developers and stuff and how they don't have the bandwidth to add something special to a new version of their game. It's difficult enough for a lot of those guys just to get it out on one system. So then if they have to do something completely ridiculous to differentiate it, you know, whatever version it is, you know, that they're going to add to another console, they're just not going to do it.
Right. Yeah.
So hopefully that's something else that he'll look at, because he does seem like an honest guy. Mm-hmm. But yeah, the whole thing with the Xbox experience and everything is they're definitely overhauling. This is not whatever they intended to launch, and what they're trying to fix now is something they'd never intended to do.
Yeah.
I think they just expected everybody to go along with it. And then Matrix was like, all right, I got my parachute and I'm jumping out the window. I'll see y'all later. And,
you know. Yeah. And you got Spencer. It's like, yeah, gee, thanks, bro.
And Spencer's like, look, man, all I got is these like t-shirts. Okay. I change them all the time. This is all I'm doing right now. Why are you doing this to me?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Anyways, I wanna end with Brandon's What We're Playing list. So, Lee, you wanna let us know what you've been up to?
I have not been doing much. I've been playing the Uncharted Collection, because back when the original Uncharted came out, my son, I think, was 2, and it was one of those things where I couldn't do it. You know, like I couldn't find the time between having a kid and you know, my wife, and we were living in an apartment at the time. We were having just trying to get everything together. Things were crazy with life.
Right.
So I never – well, it's funny. So I never got around to it. I remember getting frustrated with it, because it seemed like all that you really ever did was get into these, like, just every other 4 feet was getting into a shootout with somebody.
Yeah.
And – you know, this had come off the time of playing things like Prince of Persia and all that stuff, the 3D one. And there's a lot of things in the first Uncharted that were very Prince of Persia-like, just kind of like looping around rooms, that sort of weird platforming. And so it was very interesting to me to kind of go back and play this.
Yeah.
Because there are some things about that game that are great, but there are some things about it that are straight ass. Yeah. Like the amount of shooting in that game is garbage. Now, it is a lot better. It's a lot less twitchy doing 60 frames a second. But, man, the game looks weird now, too, in 60 frames a second. But, like, I just went through and did that blue room, you know, the infamous one that people ended up glitching out on because they were just like, this is just completely unfair. I mean, it's still fun, but I'm definitely kind of looking at it with fresh eyes. And what I'm hoping to kind of see is how, because I never played 2 and I never played 3, so this is kind of like an interesting thing for me, because, and I own them.
Yeah.
But it was just one of those things, like, you know, with my child at the particular time that we were in, I just never got a chance to play any of this stuff.
Yeah.
So it's interesting for me to go through it, but I'm really hoping that 2 doesn't have nearly as many just bullshit shooting corridors, because
that's
getting old.
It doesn't.
Yeah.
Shit. Uncharted 2 is a real treat.
What I hear. I mean, I've even had a friend of mine even tell me, he's like, it's the best third person shooter anything I've ever played. And so I'm down with that. But it's just crazy to me to play 1, and 1 really feels like 2 different games. It feels like a third person shooter and then like a Prince of Persia kind of slapped together, and it doesn't seem to work. Like, I think it works like for 2007.
Yeah.
But, you know, not now.
Yeah.
At least that's kind of the way that I see it. So I've been doing that. I beat the ever living piss out of Transformers Devastation, which Best Buy and Activision can both lick my balls. And the reason for that is I don't know if you guys kept up with any of it. You guys have heard me numerous times like rant about not pre-ordering anything and crap like that.
Yeah.
But I did pre-order Transformers because I'm a huge Transformers fan. It was a huge part of my childhood. Mm. And Devastation, by the way, for the record, is a fantastic game. Mm. It is fantastic. It is, however, it is short. It is extremely short. It takes about 6 hours. The one thing, though, you know what it does? You know, you guys have heard me talk about this, I don't know how many times on the show, where I've said, like, you know, the big thing for me is I want whatever I'm playing to sort of be meaningful.
Right.
There's no fat in that game. However, not only is there no fat, there's really not a lot of meat either. You're kind of just going from boss battle to boss battle. It is made by Platinum, so there's definitely a pedigree. The combat is fantastic, but you can tell that – there was not really any money in this. Like this, they're because like one of the things that's just weird that's in the game is there is a random loot system, so you can start crafting like crazy guns and all this other stuff, and it's really cool, but it doesn't belong in the game whatsoever. Like I feel like they put that there because there's meat to the game, but there's not a lot. Simply, I think, because they didn't have time for there to be a lot. Like the opening, it looked like all the budget went into the characters and to the combat. Like they were given a choice. Like you can make the game look good and you can make it play well. And that's it. Everything else, because like it looks like you're playing the cartoon. Like it's
beautiful. Yeah.
But that's it. The actual environments are garbage. It's again, you can just tell like either the money ran out or Activision just said, this is what you're working with. So they got some C-list team that they hired off the street to do the environments, and Platinum put the work into the characters. Mm-hmm. But it plays fantastically. Pretty much every boss battle that you could want to play, everyone that you could want to fight. I mean, the very first level has you fighting Devastator, and it just gets crazier from there. So I put a lot of time into that, and what was funny is that I was really looking forward to going back and kind of playing it on higher difficulties, but I had pre-ordered from Best Buy, and you're supposed to get these skins for, like, Nemesis Prime. You're supposed to get a skin that changes side swipe into red alert and then get, like, a specific sword. And apparently Activision just didn't send those codes to Best Buy. And, like, Best Buy actually told me I should call Activision, which was hysterical. And we won't even get into how ridiculous that is. But yeah, so I honestly, that part of it really has kind of soured me from going back to the game, because, you know, I remember talking to the Best Buy people and I was like, why did I bother pre-ordering it from you if you guys can't actually come through with your part of it? And they're just like, oh, you should call Activision. And I'm like, oh, okay, well, yeah, whatever. And it just left a really bad taste in my mouth. And then, of course, Activision doesn't want to take any responsibility for it whatsoever.
Yeah.
So, you know, but remember, this is the same group of people, you know, that are like, oh my God, you know, used games. Of course, they're not as bad as EA was, but used games are destroying the industry. And you guys have to pre-order because, you know, our families won't eat and everything. And I did the one thing that I don't normally do to get something that I wouldn't normally care about getting. And I didn't even get it.
Yeah.
So, it's one of those things that's just very frustrating to me. And it kind of is exemplary of why our the whole thing with gaming is kind of broken. But it's a good game. If you guys like it, it's Bayonetta with Transformers, really. Right. Not nearly to the scale.
Right. Hold on, guys. I got a phone call.
All right.
Go right ahead.
But yeah, if you guys have any interest whatsoever in that kind of stuff, if you are even a minute Transformers fan, it is very, very worth it. So, but it's probably worth it at maybe $30. Like, I think if I bought it at $30, I would feel like I got away with something.
Yeah, I think that's probably what I'm going to end up doing, is just waiting for the sales and pick it up then.
Yeah, and it's worth it. I'm sure during Black Friday it'll probably be pretty cheap. And it is. It's a lot of fun, man. Like, I mean, again, I don't know if you guys are Transformers fans, but just like fighting Devastator and beating the shit out of Soundwave and Megatron, it was obvious, like, oh my God, you know what else they did too? This was the coolest thing for me. They got Vince DiCola to do the soundtrack. He's the one that did the soundtrack from the 1986 movie. Like, I mean, this, like, and they have the original voice cast. Like, Frank Welker is old, but he's there as Megatron and Soundwave. You know, they got the same guy that did Peter Cullen did Optimus Prime, same dude that did Bumblebee, everybody. I mean, it's legit. Yeah. The only person that's not in there is Chris Latta, and that's because he's dead.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, if they could have pulled that one off, wow. Would have had an interesting conversation there.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's what I've been doing. You guys should totally check it out. It's worth it if you like Transformers. I don't know that it would stand on its own, I guess, if it wasn't just, you know, it leans on the fact that it is also a Transformers game that is made by Platinum. Yeah. I don't think how short it is would be acceptable for a lot of people. If it didn't also kind of have that pedigree, and it is, I mean,
$60,
not for $60 exactly. I don't know if it's 60 or if it's 50, but it is definitely a worthwhile play. And like I said, at 20 or 30, I mean, I think it's probably a good purchase at 40, to be honest, because it does really cater to kind of what I've been looking for, which is, like I said, it is about 6 hours. But there's not a moment wasted in that. You're not doing collect-a-thons or any sort of nonsense. Like, it is 100% balls to the walls. It's moving to the next one. It's Platinum, exactly. Mm. So it's definitely worth the time.
Cool. Definitely going to check it out. How about you, Brandon?
Okay. So
that was fantastic timing.
Yeah. So first things first, because it's, you know, spirit of the seat of the month, I decided I'm going to go do the Evil Within. Good game, you know, bizarre, terrifying, the voice acting for the main character is a little underwhelming because apparently nothing shocks this guy, but you know, everything else is still, well, freaking terrifying.
Yeah, there's...
Also, I played and finished Undertale, and I'm going to get to that in just a second. Also, I finally got a hold of Guilty Gear Xrd Sign for PS3, and I cannot believe it took
just
me so damn long.
Revelator.
Yeah, and I cannot believe it took me so damn long to get it. This game is amazing.
Isn't it, though?
It really is. It is really hard to, not just visually, for example, it's really hard to explain to someone, you know, just in words, how beautiful this game is, because this is one of those games you have to see in motion to really appreciate it.
Yeah.
The way that the graphics are done for this game in particular are absolutely brilliant. The way that the animation, the sort of 2D style animation and the 3D polygons are integrated so seamlessly is something that you will not appreciate until you actually see it.
Yeah.
Because the truth is, the whole game is 3D polygons, but the animation style is
so...
It looks like it's drawn.
Yeah.
It looks like anime, really.
Now, are you playing it at 30 or 60?
30 at the moment.
Okay, because I know it's the PS3 version. I was just curious about
that. But yes, it looks like anime and moves like anime, but it is all 3D polygons. And you can't really appreciate this until you do a finisher. You know, at which point the whole thing goes balls to the wall insane.
Matrix style.
Yeah. Matrix style, yeah. The story mode is also really good. When I talk about story mode, the story mode that they did for this is really unique. But the story mode for this game actually takes place after the actual arcade mode. If you do the arcade mode, you get the more or less main game story. Then after that, you can go to the story mode, which is basically a long visual novel with occasional animation, and it is amazing. It's the Guilty Gear anime you have been wanting
to see.
That we've
needed for years and years and years and years.
And it is amazing.
And I wouldn't be at all surprised if Revelator was basically a second season.
Yeah. When
I finally get it.
So, other stuff, obviously the gameplay is solid, but Guilty Gear's gameplay has always been really solid.
Yeah, it's been pared back, though. It's not quite as crazy as it used to be, so it's actually approachable by normal humans.
Obviously, the character designs and the music are freaking insane, because, again, this is Daisuke Ishiwatari, the man can do pretty much everything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And his character design has always been crazy and insane. And of course, you know, music wise, it's a Guilty Gear game, so it's lots and lots of hard rock and heavy metal, mostly done by Issei Watari's band.
Well, Ash wasn't actually involved with this.
Nah, that's true. But he still composed all the music. Yeah. So
yeah.
It might as well be his band.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a great game. Get a hold of it if you can, because it is amazing, and it deserves to be played by more people.
Yeah.
It's just awesome. Now, let me talk to you about Undertale.
Now, I've heard some things about this game that's just been kind of all over the place, so...
How do you mean?
Well, no, I can't show really us where the game touched you. It's been fairly vague, but go on.
Barely vague. If you've looked at Metacritic, this thing's like one of the most acclaimed PC games ever made.
I have not.
Yeah.
The Backstreet Boys have also sold like 3 trillion records.
That's true. Yeah. But the difference being that Undertale... yeah. But,
just so Undertale... contrary.
Yeah, popularity doesn't carry much weight with me.
Yeah.
Anyway, go ahead.
Undertale, of course, is the sort of spiritual JRPG created by Toby Fox. Toby Fox was, up to this point, he was known for being one of the main music guys on the Homestuck webcomic franchise. He also did work on a Earthbound hack that sort of gained sort of a cult following. This was his first original gaming project, and he did pretty much everything on it. The writing, the design, the music. He had some help with some of the artwork and animation, but everything else is basically all him. So basically the idea behind this game is you are this kid who, for whatever reason, he's compelled to climb up this mountain. He trips and he falls down this hole into the actual mountain and underground. In the world that you're playing is, there was apparently thousands of years ago, there was a war between humans and monsters. And at some point during that war, the monsters had to retreat and basically escape into the mountain. And there was a barrier that was made between the human world and the monster world, and they've been trapped there ever since. Now, when you first... I'm going to be serious for a second. It is really hard to talk about this game and not spoil anything, because so much of the joy of this game is discovering what you get, what you see, and how things go. Because this game takes some serious twists and turns here and there.
Maybe that's why everything I've heard about it's been so vague.
Yeah, people intentionally do that because the thing is, this game, everybody knows that in a JRPG, the last third, the game goes completely off the rails into crazy town. But this game especially so. When you first fall down
good
into this
bad,
game...
Good or bad, though. Because like, when we talk about JRPGs going off the rails, I mean, a lot of the times it's not for the better. It's,
yeah, for
oh,
this
here,
it
I
is.
Was the villain all along. Like, who the fuck are you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
For this, it's actually very much for the better. And basically, when you fall down the hole, the very first character you run into is this cute little animated flower named Flowey. Flowey is an asshole. Because he acts so innocent, and he's like, oh, you're going to be... He's like, hey, man, what you need to do to get by is you need lots of love, and I'm going to give you these love pellets. And see, the thing is, in this game, when the game basically goes like, if you're doing an attack, you have sort of like a rhythm type thing where you're trying to, you know, get it to hit at the right place to get maximum damage. And then when you go into defense mode, your character is sort of turned into this little heart avatar that you have to move around and avoid attacks, sort of like a bullet hell type thing. And Flowey says,
I almost shudder to ask, but is a love pellet anything like a dragon diamond?
It's basically something that kills you. because it's actually not a love pellet. He hits you with one, and then it hits your health, and he's like, you idiot. In this world, it's kill or be killed. And so he then tries to kill you again, and then suddenly this little fireball appears and knocks him off the screen. And then suddenly the one character, and then suddenly Toriel, aka Goat Mom, appears. Hold on.
Goat Mom.
Yep.
You said Goat Mom.
Goat Mom. That's her nickname.
Am I allowed to be sober for this? Or
continue.
She's one of the monsters in this game. She's sort of like a vaguely anthropomorphic goat character with fangs, and basically she's the one who
exactly what her name sounds like.
Yeah, her real name is Toriel. Again, Goat Mom is just a nickname that the fans have given her. But she's like, okay, sorry. It's like, you know, it's terrible that a creature would torture just at such a young child. Let me help you. And so she takes you sort of through some of the early puzzles. She helps you out, sort of explains some of the overall mechanics of the game. At one point, when you go up to one of your first puzzles, she actually takes your hand and holds your hand and walks you through it.
Literally.
Yeah, literally. And then she takes you into her home and she makes you a pie. And, you know, if you decide you want to go take a nap, you know, to sort of recharge your battery, she'll leave you a slice out in the room. The whole point is the game is making you basically tell you you are going to love Toriel. No matter what you want, you are going to love her. She is Goat Mom. You cannot deny her.
I feel like that sounds like the beginning of a porn, but that's
just... Well, then what happens is then eventually you're going to decide, you know, I want to go home. So she says, okay, I need to go do something. And then you follow her downstairs into the basement where that leads out to this passage that leads out to the main part of the underground monster world. She says, you know, this is the passage that leads out. I'm going to destroy it so that nobody will ever get hurt again. And he's like, no, I need to go home. And she's like, fine then, face me. So then you basically go into battle with her. And again, I just want to point out...
Simply get bodied because it's the first part of the game.
Yeah, but I want to point out, this is that one game where you do not have to... Where you do not, and in fact, are encouraged not to kill a single person in the entire game. The battle with basically the way that the sort of combat system, for lack of a better word, in this game works is you have the primary, you know, attack function, which I already mentioned. It's the rhythm thing where you try and get the bar to hit over the target at the right point to get maximum damage. Mm-hmm. And then there's the defense part, which, of course, is you doing the bullet hell thing. But the thing is in... You know, Pat, you'll probably appreciate this. There's the act function. And when the act function is, this is where you can interact with the enemy. It's actually kind of similar to what you do in a Shin Megami Tensei game where you negotiate and interact with a character. So basically, like, you can do things like, you know, talk to them or, right, you know, beg, I don't want to fight. And with Toriel, basically, you have to keep sparing her, basically. Basically guilt trip her into letting you go forth. The thing is, though, is that it does genuinely affect her, because there's a point where when you're trying to spare her and you go into the defense mode, you know, the bullet hell part, her attacks are intentionally trying to avoid you. And, you know, eventually she gives up and she lets you go through. And so you go out into the regular world, and this is the part where it's going to get hard to sort of talk about it, because so much of the enjoyment of this game is the discovery parts. Mm-hmm. If I can go about it, basically you meet a lot of weird characters. There's these two skeleton brothers. One of them is named Sans. The other one is named Papyrus. And they basically, their dialogue boxes are written in their namesake fonts. Sans is Comic Sans, and Papyrus is Papyrus. You know, also there's characters like, let's see, who else? You'll run into Undyne, who is a fish woman who runs around in a suit of armor. There's enemies like Greater Dog, which is basically a Pomeranian in a giant suit of armor. And when you want to fight,
fantastic.
Yeah, and when you fight him, you actually don't have to attack him. You can just call him over and then pet him and then play with him, and eventually he'll fall asleep and you can spare him. Yeah. There's Alphys, who is the a little dinosaur chick who is the scientist, and she's a nerdy otaku and she has a crush on Undyne. So yeah, that's there too. Also Flowey. I talked about Flowey. I'm not going to try and spoil this too much, but Flowey is extremely integral to the game. He is more or less, he is the primary antagonist of the game, but you don't really realize what kind of antagonist of the game type of antagonist he is until later on. He is less a sort of Kefka-esque villain than an Eldritch Abomination. When you basically, in order, the thing is with this game is I talked about how you can do both a pacifist run or what's called the genocide run, which is the full on violence attack run. And I'm just going to go ahead and say it. Don't do the genocide run, not because it's boring. It's quite engaging, but you will feel absolutely wretched afterwards.
You really will. Middle ground.
There is, that's what's called the neutral path. Basically what happens with the neutral path is if you play it like, you know, which is what I did, which is I just did a regular pacifist run. When you do the pacifist run the first time, you end up getting the neutral option. And what happens is you end up fighting the final boss. And with the final boss, unfortunately, there is no mercy option here. You have to actually have to battle and attack them. But the thing is, after the battle is over, you still can spare them afterwards. Like, during the actual battle, there is no mercy option. The actual character actually takes their weapon and destroys the mercy option on the menu. But the thing is, if you spare their life, Flowey shows up and kills them. And then Flowey then turns into something that would make give Cthulhu nightmares. And I'm not going to spoil it, but it is nightmarish.
Yeah.
I mean, it is completely out of left field, and it is terrifying.
Yeah.
And the thing is, before you can actually do this battle, Flowey will actually end the game. He will actually make the game crash. Literally.
Deliberately.
Deliberately. And so then you bring the game back up. And, you know, it starts off normal, then it gets corrupted, then Flowey shows up, and then he turns into thing that would give Cthulhu nightmares, and basically it's a giant bullet hell segment that is actually very challenging. And eventually you can get him, and then again you spare him, and then he'll give you a hint that you can go back and do the full pacifist option, which basically there are a handful of things you have to do. You know, if you've already been running a mainly pacifist run already, you know, that's already taken care of. What you have to do is there's things like after you fight Undyne, there's a thing where you have to give her a drink of water because the battle ends in a part of the underground called Hotland. And basically she gets overheated in the suit of armor and passes out. And so she decides, yeah, I'm going to spare you. So basically then you go back to another part of the underground where her house is. And basically you try and end up befriending her. And, you know, you go through this weird sort of, I'm not going to spoil it, but she is adorkable, basically.
Yeah.
She is a giant dork.
Yeah. One thing that you mentioned on Friday when we were talking about this back then was pretty much all of your actions in this game are tracked, regardless of whether you save or not.
Yes. If you, the thing is, I talked about the fight with Toriel earlier. If you fight Toriel and kill her and then immediately regret your actions, which you will, not because the game will necessarily affect you negatively at that moment, but because, oh my God, you just killed Goat Mom. If you try to attempt to go back and reset your game and restart, Flowey will show up and say, "I know what you did. You murdered her, and now you're trying to erase it." So yes, the game totally calls you out on it.
Wow.
The game thinks of everything.
I don't know if I like my games being that judgmental of my personal decisions.
Well, that's why I said, like,
don't you fucking judge me. There's a character named Goat Mom in this game.
That's why you don't want to do the genocide run, because you will feel absolutely wretched afterwards. The whole sort of trying to do things nonviolently is a big part of this game's message. And the thing is, after you complete the pacifist run, if you try to go back, Flowey will show up and say, "Look, man, you don't have to go back and try and do anything else. We're happy now."
Yeah.
If you try and do this, you're going to reset everything back to where we were all trapped underground again, and I'm not sure if we can handle that anymore.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's, you know, there's a reason why this game is getting so much acclaim right now. It's not a particularly long game. For an RPG, it's actually fairly short, but it's one of those games where the amount of time is used very economically, and it uses everything it can to just give you an emotional response. And the characters, you will get attached to these characters. I'm not going to lie. And, you know, by the time the final battle goes in, you know, just the whole ethos of the game will have just sunk into your skin.
Yeah, this sounds like some really, really very unique type of storytelling that I don't think we're seeing in a lot of games these days. And
there's a number of reasons why this game has gotten so much acclaim. For one thing, it is genuinely fun, and the story is really compelling, and the character design is extremely compelling. Funny, too. I've mentioned some of the crazy characters. There's a character later on. There's an enemy that you come in contact with later on called the Tsundere Plane, which is an airplane that is a total tsundere.
Because of course it is.
Yeah. You know, and it's attacking you. Not that it likes you or anything, but... And basically, in order to, you know, get it to the point where you can spare it, you basically have to make it blush. To the point that it just doesn't want to fight you anymore.
This sounds ridiculous, and I must play it.
Well, it's only $10 on Steam, so you really have no excuse at this point.
I believe I will go to my Steam client now and buy this.
Yes. Also, just the real reason among everything else, the reason that this game is so popular and why it's getting so much acclaim is because it is absolutely 100% sincere through and through. It is not cynical at the least. It absolutely believes in its message 100%, and it doesn't, you know, it's heartfelt just absolutely. You know, this is an absolute passion project. There is no cynicism to be had here.
Yeah. This is like the quintessential definition of what an indie game should stand for.
Yes. You know, it's the same reason why things like, you know, My Little Pony, Friendship is Magic, or Adventure Time, or Steven Universe have gotten so popular, because they are so sincere.
Yeah.
It is not cynical at all. And that's Undertale. You have to play this game.
So when you describe it like that, I'm not sure if I'm feeling it.
Yeah, it's one of those... You know, it may not be for everybody, but...
I was going to say, it sounds like the opposite of me.
Yeah. Well, it may not be
if you want to get rid of some of your
being like King Cynic.
Yeah.
You know, it may not necessarily be for everybody, but for the people who have played it, they just cannot say enough about it.
Yeah.
So. And it's one, and I will openly admit that it's one of those games where for the first little while, it's kind of a slow burn, but you get it pretty quickly.
Yeah.
So, yeah, if Undertale, $10 on Steam, you have no excuse.
Okay, that's a lot to unpack. So, you know, might as well move on to our next story, which is Street Fighter V beta.
Yay!
Thursday.
It's back soon.
Yay! Mm-hmm. A lot of interesting things going on with this one, though.
Yeah. PC players in.
Also, how they're handling the characters.
Yeah. The six characters. The six characters that have been. The first six characters that were announced after the ones that were in the first beta are in, and the characters from the first beta are out.
Yeah.
Mm. So, unfortunately, Zangief and Lara will not be there.
No.
Nope. We're not quite getting that far along of a build.
Yeah.
Mm.
Ken, Vega, Nicali, and Karin, I think, are the first
Mika.
Four. Mika are the first four? Okay.
And then... Rashid will be unlocked after one day, and the day after that, the time release will be Karin.
Yeah. So this is just running over the weekend.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's the 22nd through the 25th, so starts Thursday.
Yep. So I'll have to.
And it will be good to have it back.
Yeah. I'll have to make sure my PS4 hasn't decided to download Destiny again for some reason. Yeah. We didn't talk about that, but that was...
Wasn't that just an ad?
No, it pre-downloaded Destiny.
You're kidding, man.
No, it's like the U2 album on your PS4. It's...
Here you go.
Yeah.
Crap, it's happening already. Activision is not going to be happy until they've shoved this game down everybody's throat.
Yeah. Yeah, it was basically, the ad was there. And if you thought, hey, this looks kind of cool, then you'd buy it, and then you'd discover that you didn't have to download it. It was already there. It's like, nice.
Wow.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
So how big was it? Like, what? Oh, God.
It's
that
like,
makes me wonder if it blew out my internet cap.
It's 27 gigs.
How is someone not, like, suing them for this?
Give them time.
Sure, yeah, I'm pretty sure that's working on that.
No, like, seriously, I didn't realize it downloaded the whole game. I thought it was just an ad. I'm going to officially go take my PS4 off of rest mode, never put it in that again.
Yeah.
Because, no, seriously, like, how could I have that argument with Comcast?
Yeah.
Like, if I blew over my cap or something like that,
yeah.
How could I have that argument with them if a device...
No, I agree.
Yeah. Yeah. To be fair, like, you can actually go into the settings and say, do not download content in the background.
That's such bullshit.
Yeah, it's, I don't know, it's one of those really irritating things that, in theory, sounds like a good idea, but in practice, not so much. Anyways, yeah, you want to take us to this next one, Pat?
So someone finally went down for swatting.
Finally.
Yeah. Yep.
Justice.
Yeah, this one happened...
In Connecticut.
Out in Connecticut. Looks like he's facing a year in jail. Oh, he's been sentenced.
Oh.
So, yeah, he's been given 1 year for basically inciting police action under false pretenses.
Yeah, which,
and
he
was apparently involved in six such cases. I say good.
Yeah. Yes.
I mean, I don't see anything wrong with this at all.
Picking up the soap for a year or so should get some of these pissants to knock it off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hopefully. Because, you know, this is something that could turn ugly quite quickly. I mean, it hasn't happened yet, but there is always the possibility that one of these swatting incidents ends up with the cops opening fire.
Yeah.
And
then you're going to see it on CNN. And
yeah. So, you know, if it's...
Especially with things, you know, the current climate in this country for that sort of thing.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
We're also in a presidential race.
Yeah.
So can I be the unpopular opinion here and say that I feel like that's too much? And I'm very against swatting, but like I've sort of been in this phase, I guess, where I've been looking at like how we as a society kind of meter out justice and how uneven it is. So like I don't agree with swatting in any way, shape, or form. Like I think the guy should go to jail. I don't know that a year is in any way going to, number one, I don't think it's going to stop this kind of thing. But number two, I don't think it actually addresses the real problem, which, you know, I don't want to, we can have this conversation to a deeper level at another time, but like, do you guys remember the most recent shooting that we've had?
Yeah.
I think there's a very like sort of underlying issue that we have, you know, as a society with how we deal with people that feel rejected.
Yeah.
And
yes,
we're creating these kinds of situations where people who have felt powerless for so long all of a sudden have some sort of power. And I kind of feel like swatting is sort of coming out of that, like in the same way that we have people that are completely like non-confrontational in real life, but the moment that they get behind a keyboard, it's, you know, faggot this and faggot that and every horrible thing that they could say, they do.
Yeah.
And I don't think jail time solves this problem. Like, I do think, and I know some people might be like, well, we need to make an example out of this kid. Like, I'm kind of for that as well, but at the same time, this isn't just a matter of somebody doing something stupid like taking a candy bar because they couldn't control themselves. We're not talking about a 5-year-old here. Mm-hmm. And I guess I also look at this kind of thing where if you're going to punish someone for something, there has to be a reason behind the punishment that's going to also address the problem. And I don't feel like this does that at all. And so while I definitely think the person should be in trouble, I don't know that sticking them in jail for a year is going to do anything to address why this kid was stupid enough to swat someone in the first place.
Well, keep in mind, he didn't just swat once. He did this like 5 or 6 times.
I understand that. But that is also a pattern. That is a pattern of someone who has a type of mental deficiency that also needs to be addressed. That doesn't get addressed in jail.
Yeah, that's, you're right, unfortunately. Yeah.
And so while what's going to happen to this person is that while they might not swat somebody else, he's going to learn a lot more about being a criminal in jail than he was just by swatting people.
That's
and
true.
There's not a good trajectory for him after this. He's going to be a convicted felon. He's not going to be able to vote. He's not going to be able to do a whole lot of things that the average person can do. And this is going to be the kind of thing, like, don't get me wrong, like, you know, he's not going to be able to – this will most likely affect job opportunities and everything else like that. I'm also kind of the mindset that there also has to be a point where someone stops paying essentially for what they've done, no matter how stupid it was.
Yeah.
Unless we're talking about something like rape or murder. Like, if you get labeled as a rapist or a murderer, you know, and it's something that you did, then frankly, that should probably follow you around for the rest of your life. And we do know that there's a habitual pattern with this and everything, but sending a person to jail for this kind of thing doesn't actually address the issue. And that's, that's kind of where I have a problem with it, because I definitely think there should be some kind of punishment for this kind of thing. But this doesn't stop the next person from doing it. It doesn't address the issue. Like, again, we could get very political on a lot of this stuff, and I will try not to do that. But I think it's more than just a mental health issue. I think it's sort of like an unsatiated rage that drives this thing. And I think that rage is
– I don't think this is a mental health issue at all. I think he's just an asshole.
Exactly. But I also think that that also comes from a type of powerlessness.
Yeah.
That I think particularly whether this is good or bad. I think particularly it's something that gamers feel, because we have people that very much retreat into these virtual worlds and everything else like that so that they can be someone, because mm-hmm. they're really not anyone outside. And for some people, they need to be someone.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of where this stuff has me conflicted, because I guess I don't know that jail is the type of punishment that's going to stop this person from having the tendencies in the first place that he did that would have caused him to swat somebody anyway. I guess that's really kind of what I'm getting to, because
if you think about it, you know, a person, you know, obviously everybody, you know, I mean, play is a basic human need. We all know that. But, you know, the way that, you know, entertainment is, where it's so escapism, obviously there's nothing necessarily wrong with escapism.
Well, sure, I'd hope not.
The thing is that the depth of escapism that people sometimes are required, because, you know, the actual real world is just cruel and shitty. If you really think about it, there is no reason that the world should be that cruel and shitty to make a person to take that level of escapism.
Right. No, and I agree. I think it's tied into, as well as, like, I mean, you have a lot of these people who may be socially awkward, and just due to that social awkwardness, they're not really able to get very far in life either. They might not have anything remotely fulfilling in their lives. And that sort of thing is fuel to rage. Rage is sorrow, essentially, turned inward.
Yeah.
And that's what produces this kind of thing. Jail doesn't solve that.
Yeah. Like, you want to talk about me. I actually have Asperger's syndrome. Like I was diagnosed by medical professionals. But you know, that's – it could very well be this guy has some sort of – he might be somewhere on the autistic scale, and prison is not going to help that. Hmm. It just isn't.
No, there's.
And like I said, and Brandon, you're absolutely right in that part. I mean, there could be other things that could be a factor here. But I'm at the point where I look at so much of this stuff so differently than I did 2 years ago, because we are putting so many people in jail, I think, for the wrong reasons.
Yeah.
And again, I'm not trying to say that this guy shouldn't be held responsible for his actions. He absolutely should be. But I think that there are better forms of being able to deal with this kind of thing than putting someone who is obviously troubled anyway into a system that is going to aggravate that trouble rather than actually try to solve it.
Yeah.
And I think that this is the kind of thing that doesn't bode well for people in the future that do this shit. Because, again, don't get me wrong, I got to keep stressing this. I think anybody that swats someone is an asshole. Mm-hmm. You know, you guys heard me tell a story here about Dark Side Phil, who you know, I have a history with. But and while I think in some ways, you know, I think Phil's a good guy, but in other ways, that his sort of online persona is to be an asshole and to scream and to rage and all these other things. And there are people out there who just absolutely hate his guts, and they swatted him. You know, he could have had his head blown off mm-hmm. because someone hates someone like him who essentially has a voice. And that I find that extremely troubling. I don't think jail's the answer.
No,
I just don't. There's you can get this person involved in a whole bunch of stuff, a lot of different community efforts. I mean, hell, if we're sitting here, we're talking about the mental well-being of people. If somebody finds out that this person is actually mentally sound and he really is just a gigantic dick, then this is the kind of thing where you make a person like that have to deal with community service at a mental institution. Hmm. You know, you do those kinds of things. You put them in situations where they show that the things that they're doing, that their consequences have actions, not we're going to stick you with a bunch of people and now you got to worry about getting stabbed and raped and everything. And we're going to put you in a situation where everything that you are is going to be magnified and turned even uglier.
Yeah. So, you want to talk about not turning the show?
You don't think that happened to a whole bunch of swatters that would eventually get people to knock it off?
No, because there are still, and I'll tell you why, there are still people that in this country, at least in America, that have gone to jail, that have been sued out of their minds for stealing music and video games and movies. That doesn't stop it. I don't think at this point, particularly anything that deals with the idea of identity, particularly as it relates to electronic media, I don't think that examples really work. I mean, look at these idiots in Gamersgate. I mean, look at that kind of rage that those people produce towards women under the guise that it's about ethics in journalism. Those people have, I think, something going on that is causing them to feel that way. I think that we can make examples out of any numerous amount of groups of those types of people. Hell, you can make, to take it to an extreme example, you can make an example out of neo-Nazis and skinheads and all these other people. It doesn't stop other people from becoming that. So, because again, we're not addressing the underlying problem of why someone would have so much anger and so much rage and everything else like that, that they would pull a prank like this that could essentially get somebody killed. So again, I'm not trying to say the guy's not an asshole or anything else like that, or that he shouldn't be punished. I'm definitely not saying that, but I don't think that for this kind of thing, jail is the answer, because all you're doing is taking someone who was probably close to almost kind of being over the edge in a certain way.
Yeah.
And you're going to put them in a situation where that does nothing but get magnified.
Right.
Jail, for, you know, people can say what they want about jail, but I've had friends in jail. I've had family members that have done that kind of stuff, that have been involved in this stuff. I have friends that are police. Nobody comes out of jail better.
No.
Nobody. And so, I mean, I had a friend of mine who got locked up for years because he was in a car asleep when a friend of his decided to stop and rob a Circle K. And they found him liable as basically an accessory after the fact. And he went to jail for 4 years. And he came out and he's all right, but he is still a convicted felon. He's doing his best that he can. He's halfway successful in a lot of ways. You know, he's doing all right. He's got a family now and everything else. He is the exception. And I'll never forget when he got out, one of the things that he told me, he was like, the craziest part about jail is that I met the best of people that didn't deserve to be there. And I don't mean like the best of people as in like the best people in jail, like the best people I've ever had the opportunity of meeting in my life. And I also, they were sitting side by side with the worst.
Yeah.
And that is sort of really what jail is about. And I mean, we could talk about any number of things that don't have to do with games. You know, there are people that are put in jail that definitely do not belong there. Nonviolent offenders and everything else like that. So yeah, again, I think we're at the point where this is a 50s style answer to a 21st century problem.
Exactly.
So, and we can just leave it at that.
Yeah. You want to talk about not turning the show political? I started singing The International at the end of Let's Weekend.
Oh.
Off key.
Off key, yeah.
So that was awesome.
Hey. You did keep that on the recording, didn't you?
Oh, of course.
Oh, thank goodness.
More pleasant news. It looks like the Wall Street Journal is reporting that the Nintendo NX may in fact be a hybrid system.
Which we pretty much already knew, I think.
Yeah, we speculated.
The idea was out there. It, you know, reported, rumored. It's certainly not confirmed just yet, but all signs do seem to be pointing in that direction.
Yeah. Implementation is going to be interesting here because if they do it one way where all the smarts are in the console and then the handheld is just basically a screen, it's basically a Wii U, and that didn't work so well.
No.
I don't think it can be that.
No, it can't. I don't think it can be that.
Not to be a proper hybrid, because it can't be it can't be any part of a handheld unless it will function independent of the base stack.
Yeah.
Right.
And so what I'm thinking is that this system is actually going to be two systems.
I agree.
Yeah.
It's going to be – they'll both have the exact same hardware. You just choose your form factor.
Yeah, and I think that this will also address sort of the split screen issue that's plagued the Wii U, because now if you want to play split screen, you just have to have the handheld system. Like, one of the things that we've dealt with in my house is Splatoon, you can't really play you can't play it online with two people.
No.
You know, you have to have a separate console. And then the actual split screen function of it is just one-on-one where you're popping balloons. Absolute garbage.
Yeah.
But if – and part of that is because the Wii U does not have the processing power to have both of you guys playing online, deal with sending packets back and forth to get you both the information that you need in real time. It's just not that powerful. So the solution to deal with that and to still kind of keep it in Nintendo's like wacky wheelhouse is, okay, let's create a system where the hardware is also – in the handheld version, which is the exact opposite of the tablet currently. Because, you know, the tablet really is just a streaming mechanism at this point. And all, of course, all the real work is done by the actual system. But now what they can do is they can go, okay, well, the system, the handheld and the home console are the same. And then that also creates a type of situation where software can be created for both of them, which puts Nintendo back in a unique position, because now they can not only can they capitalize on the fact that we know that they're, you know, they're good at handheld hardware and handheld style games and everything else like that. They can deal with it on both fronts. They can produce console style, like, you know, widescreen, whatever you want to call it. They can produce that type of content, and then it's just automatically converted on the go.
Yeah.
And that is something that no one else will really be able to tout, because, I mean, we've seen how the Vita failed, because the Vita failed because it didn't capitalize on being portable. And right. then the actual home console style games that came out for it weren't that great anyway. But could you imagine now? So Nintendo, instead of going, okay, we need to develop a separate Fire Emblem for the home console and a separate Fire Emblem for the portable, no, we just have to develop one now.
Yeah.
And you can use it both ways. That's definitely the route I see them going.
Yeah.
So does this mean that maybe Nintendo is trying to get back to being a leader in the hardware department again?
Well, from the reports, it looks like they're going to be touting what they claim to be industry-leading chips, which... Okay, given what the industry's state is right now with the PS4 and Xbox One, that's kind of a low bar. You know, I did hear, you know, reports that they're going to be using as yet unreleased AMD chips. So, you know, these two consoles might be based on the Zen architecture, which would make sense because that architecture is very, very scalable.
Yeah, well, we have to remember that sort of Nintendo's MO for a long time has always been taking technology that is not necessarily old, but what they consider matured, and then using that technology. No,
let's call it what it is. It's cheap. They are cheap. I mean, the Wii U is like four GameCubes slapped together.
Pretty much.
Wii was two GameCubes slapped together. So, I mean, that is definitely their MO. And that's the other part of this, is that you could think, if just based on the way that they've previously operated, they're definitely going to go that route. If they can have something scalable where their next iteration of the console, not this one, not the NX, but let's just call it the NX2. I mean, if the NX2 can basically still interact with the NX1, that is the way that they work. I mean, look at how the DS came out. It had a Game Boy slot on it.
Yeah.
Or it had a GBA slot on it. When the GBA came out, it could also play Game Boy games. I mean, Nintendo is huge on backwards compatibility, because they, I think especially, they've known that their place in the market has sort of been tenuous at best, so that they have to be able to make it so people can justify a purchase and still play their old things. I think backwards compatibility matters more for Nintendo than any other company right now.
Yeah.
What I'm interested to see is how, if it is industry leading, how do you make that portable? I mean, the DS or the Nintendo 3DS battery life's not that great. I don't know how far along battery technology has come. I mean, of course, we could look at something like the iPhone. The iPhone is pretty powerful. But it's also, I mean, a huge chunk of the entire structure of that thing is also a battery. Yep. You know, is Nintendo going to do that? Like, that's something else that I wonder, is because it'd be great if you have something where they put out like the power of like the PlayStation 4 or something like that. How do you stick that in a portable?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, especially not have it be, I mean, you guys remember the TurboGrafx Express?
Yeah.
It lasted like 45 minutes.
Pretty much.
And batteries haven't come along that much.
No.
So.
Yeah. There's a whole lot of questions that still need to be answered. Yeah. So.
I really want Nintendo to be an industry leader again. That's just, it's just a secret hope of mine.
All I want is a way that I can play Nintendo games and not have to like burn my eyeballs out.
Yeah.
Because right? That'd be nice.
Well, yeah. See, for me, they're in a unique situation as well. Like, the funny part about this is the Wii U would be the perfect system for me if it actually had a lot of games on it.
Yeah. Like,
my TV is constantly taken up. So the fact that I could grab the tablet and still play something while sitting next to my mom or to my wife is awesome. But there's not enough on there that I want to play. Like, if I could have, like, let's just say theoretically – and I know that you can do this with like the Vita. The Vita has remote play and stuff like that. But if I could pick up the handheld of the NX and play Fallout 4 while my wife watches some TV show, and then when she's done, set it down on a dock and pick up where I left off, that's a dream come true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That checks every box that I need it to as a system. But I also know that, well, not, no is probably a strong word, but I think we can take a look at the way that things have gone over the past, you know, 15, 20 years, that Nintendo really kind of only cares about Nintendo. And because of that, this might, I feel like so far what from what I know and what we're hearing and everything else like that, is that it's going to be a great system if I just want to play Nintendo games. And that's just not enough.
Yeah. That's not a sustainable model.
Yeah, I mean, I know it is for some people, and I know there are people that feel like justified and everything else like that about doing it. Like, I feel like the Wii U wasn't a waste of money simply because of how much my kid plays it.
Yeah.
But I want something for me that is kind of sort of scalable to the way that my life works. Right. And the Vita's halfway there with the PlayStation 4. It's not good enough.
All right. Hold on just a second, guys. I got another phone call.
Sure. Cool. But that's what I'd like to see. But I just can't – I can see maybe for the first – year, you know, it'll have next year's Assassin's Creed or whatever the big game is that'll come out for the holidays, and then it'll be just like what happened this time.
Yeah.
It'll just fall off.
Yeah.
And that is one of those things that just has me like, God, do I even want to?
Yeah.
You know? So, Pat, I know you're the opposite of this because you're
I'm the direct opposite of this. I was just griping last week about all these really great games, specifically RPGs, being relegated to handhelds when their every bit is complete and well made that they need to be to deserve a spot on the consoles. And so, you know, being the direct inverse of that, I love this anyway. If this means that, you know, I'll be able to get to play future iterations of Bravely Default or you know, some Shin Megami Tensei spinoffs or Fire Emblem or whatever on the TV where frankly they belong, then
you know, it's interesting you said that, because that's something that is definitely the inverse of this. You imagine now, especially if this is the route that they go, people could probably, I think, would so here's the thing, right? One of the reasons that portable gaming has, and like for those titles that you're talking about and things like that, portable gaming has also worked because it's cheap for these companies. If Nintendo switches out of that model to where their handheld stuff is a lot more powerful, does that start, you know, kind of taking those groups and etching them out? Because like, I think about that, like how scalable will this be, right? Like, I don't know if any of you guys have an Apple TV, but one of the things that we like to do is that we do the mirror function on the TV. So I can play mobile games on my TV if I want to. And every once in a while I feel like that. So I can see this being a boon for small developers who need to make a cheap version on like a handheld, and then it automatically basically ports up to the TV. But I also wonder with that technology jump, like to Pat's point, a lot of these games feel like they should belong on the big screen. But are the budgets and everything else like there for them anymore to put them on the big screen? The answer for the longest time has been no. So I wonder what this will do to change that, or if it will at all. I wonder if we could see a split in the market that would be like, oh, this doesn't look good, so I'm just going to play it on the portable version.
Yeah. At the same time, though, like we're now in a world where pixel art based indie games are totally acceptable for a lot of people.
Yeah.
So
sorry about that, guys. I got family coming over tonight, so I'm kind of busy over here.
It's cool, bro. So I kind of think that if that's acceptable now, then maybe developing for a handheld and being able to just blast it over to a screen, even if it looks a little pixely, isn't going to be a big deal for a lot of folks.
Yeah, I mean, the PS4 for a long time was built upon indie games.
Yeah,
and so the way I look at it, like, I've been in on every attempt to get handheld platforms playable on TV. I was there for the Super Game Boy. I was there for the Game Boy Player. Yeah. I have the PSP with the video cables. I have two PlayStation TVs, probably getting a third one at some point. And at no point has it ever really felt like, while using those, no, these games don't belong here. It doesn't work. No, a lot of the time I feel like I'm playing these games in their natural state.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I've did the same thing as you, Pat. I had the Super Game Boy. I had the Game Boy Player. Hell, that's how I ended up finishing Final Fantasy VI Advance. I didn't do it on the GBA. I did it on my Game Boy Player. Mm-hmm. The only big problem too now though is that the resolution jump and making it. I think something that's going to be really important is if the NX has a good scaler.
Yeah.
And does any type of up-resing, because I don't know about you guys. Like, again, like, I mean, we have a bunch of Apple products around our house, and like, I jailbroke my iPad. Some of the games that run natively on the iPhone but don't run on the iPad look like shit.
Yeah.
So,
and they don't run on the iPad deliberately because they look like shit.
Exactly. So that's a concern. So
well, for me, I'd say the bar was Golden Sun on the Wii U, which I think looks just fine.
Well, I think that would be the big thing is how they kind of manage that. Like, if they can make that stuff look good and make it work well, I think they'll have it in the bag. And I don't think Nintendo would make this kind of jump and not think about that. At least I would hope that they wouldn't. Yeah. I mean, this is, let's be real. This is the same group that put out the Wii during the HD, the time of HD, and was just like, yeah, it's all right. I mean, one of the reasons that I couldn't enjoy Xenoblade was because it just looks like pure shit on an HD TV.
Yeah.
And I don't have room for a CRT anymore.
Yeah.
Like, I just don't. So
hopefully that's something that they address. The best way to enjoy Xenoblade right now is with
the new 3DS.
Or Dolphin.
Dolphin emulator.
I was going to say on a Wii U.
I don't know how the scaling is on the Wii U, but I know.
Speaking of which, just quick reminder, Xenoblade Chronicles X. Coming out December.
Yeah.
Yes.
We all need to get it.
Another game. Amazing LE. I won't have any time to play.
Yeah. Mm.
This also means that apparently Patrick does have psychic powers and that there really is no God.
No, but there is Street Fighter V, which is even better.
Nice. Mm. Yeah. But like I said, I think the problem of scaling to a big screen TV, I think that's something we've already solved.
Mm-hmm.
Properly, I mean, the Xbox One, for instance, it's doing scaling on a frame by frame basis, and you don't even notice it's happening.
Right, but the caveat here is that everyone else that cares about it has figured it out. Nintendo doesn't really give a shit about much. That's kind of the problem. Like, Nintendo is always going to march to their own drum. And I think at some point it's definitely to their detriment.
Yeah.
Like, people can say, look, Nintendo's a great company. They make fantastic games. But that doesn't mean that we can't be critical of all these boneheaded moves that they've made over the last 20 years. And that's one of the things that I do worry about. Like, with this, they have the opportunity to really kind of do something that no one else is doing. But if by doing something that no one else is doing, are they also going to fall into the same ruts that they have currently? I mean, there are things that people expect just based on kind of the time that we're in. And you see that in the way that games change. You see that in the way that, that the way that we consume things has changed, whether it is music, movies, books, anything else like that, video games. The way a lot of this stuff is done is that it has to evolve. Nintendo has kind of shown that for the most part, they don't really care about that. They're going to do what they want to do. And hopefully Nintendo it brings them success. Nintendo. Yeah, exactly. They hope that it'll bring them success. But, you know, you, I don't think it's arguable that for the last 15 years, Nintendo Gun and Nintendo has not brought them success. Right. Every single year, every single console generation, they have done worse than the one before it.
And I think Kimishima knows it.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Let's keep in mind they do have a new CEO.
As like viciously anti Wii U as anybody in the company, and now you know he's in charge and
he has experience here. He
gets the West. Yeah.
Gets it probably better than any other employee Nintendo has in Japan than anyone else.
Well, and so. Here's the thing. I hope that's the case because even though he is the new president, you don't pop new hardware out of your ass. It doesn't just happen. This has been going on for a while. So hopefully they're able to pivot enough to where they can make this something that's – I don't think – if Nintendo does the same thing that they've done this console generation, this upcoming one for them, that they're going to survive. I just don't – I know everybody's like, oh, don't – it's not about like hating Nintendo or gloom and doom or anything else like that. It is just literally their main market, which is the handhelds, is shrinking.
Yeah.
I mean, they can't ride that Wii war chest. You know, forever. No. I mean, that's going to run out sooner or later.
Exactly. They can't ride the Wii war chest. They're losing out to mobile, which everyone is. It's not just them. Yeah. But they're losing out to mobile. They're losing out to all of this stuff. They have been really kind of a failure this generation as far as getting to a successful place. They've made great games, but it hasn't been enough.
Yeah.
And so that's the other part of this equation that's really bothersome for me is how do they get around this? Yeah. And, you know, I think the model that they're choosing, what we're talking about, makes a lot of sense if that's what it turns out to be.
Yeah. So,
and I hope it works out for them because I don't want to see an industry where Nintendo doesn't exist.
Exactly. Yeah.
I think that would be awful.
Yeah.
But it's also kind of one of those things, like, have you guys ever just had a friend that just did stupid shit?
Oh, yeah.
Like, they just, like, what is the matter with you? Like, that kind of thing. Yeah. I feel like that's Nintendo.
Yeah.
Like, what were you doing? What were you thinking? You guys are retarded.
Yeah.
So.
Well, usually when you have a friend like that, you know, sometimes you just have to grab them by the scruff of the neck, slap them around a couple of times, and it's like, hey, you know, clean up your act. You know, it's very possible that's what Kimishima is in the process of doing. We'll have to give him the benefit of the doubt because he's only been there a couple months. So, you know, we'll wait and see. And as more news of the NX comes out, we'll start to see what direction they're actually going and have a better idea of what to expect going forward.
Mm-hmm.
And speaking of going forward, it looks like Sega is not convinced that they should be going forward with the Panzer Dragoon series.
At least not right now.
Which is a little disheartening because, you know, it seems like they're still in that mindset that they need the 4 or 5 million unit sales to have something be successful.
You know, they would be able to sort of re-energize, you know, interest in the series if, you know, they just went back and re-released some of those old games. I mean, it wouldn't exactly be that big of a... that much labor to do it. I mean,
you know, series, you've got three of the best rail shooters of all time.
And a fantastic
RPG.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, it's not like they're graphic powerhouses or anything. So, you know, it's just they need to take a chance and invest that capital.
Yeah.
And they're just so damn stingy about it
now. I'm sure taking chances to Sega right now is a slightly terrifying proposal.
I understand that, but at the same time, you know, not taking chances is...
Then again, they're investing in a PC port of Sonic Lost World, so...
Yeah, so you need to... They need to get, you know, just... just take those old Panzer and just, you know, put them on Steam.
Yeah.
You know, let people... You don't have to charge a whole lot for it. You know, just let people, you know, put a nice demo on there. Let people see what it was about those games that made them so great in the first place.
The funny thing is, it wasn't all that long ago that they had an absolute hard on for all these remakes, and now they're suddenly being selective.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, the Panzer Dragoon is one of those series that, you know, it's an awesome series, but it has never gotten the attention it deserves over here. And that's partly Sega's fault, to be honest. Yeah,
well, the first two games languished on the Saturn.
Yeah.
And the third one was very Japanese content on a very Western Xbox.
Yeah.
So. Yeah. Yeah. I guess we'll wait and see what they end up doing. We're doing a lot of waiting and seeing.
Yeah.
Basically, that's pretty much all we can do, because some of these companies just... don't understand that there is a demand out there. It might not be a huge market, like, you know, AAA numbers, but you can sell 100,000, 250,000 units and still be successful.
Well, part of the thing is, a lot of these companies are operating in the 21st century, but they're still thinking in a 90s mindset.
Yeah. Anyway.
Which would be fine if that was how they were developing games, but as far as doing business, not so much.
Yeah, it's business and the way that they're, you know, getting information out there and stuff. Yeah. Just
they're just not handling things as they should.
Yeah.
Which does lead me to this next story of a company that is handling things as they should. Valve. Yeah, so we learned recently that the Steam Link and the Steam controller are not completely Mac compatible, so, well, okay, they're not Mac compatible at all, which is a little bit of an oversight, I think. I mean, if you have your Steam client on the Mac, you should probably put some resources behind it to make sure that these are going to work. But because they didn't, so it looks like Valve is going to offer Mac users their entire Valve catalog just as kind of a oops, we screwed up type gift.
So, here you go.
Yeah. So, you can play all the games that you already own. That's great.
Yeah.
Just not with a Steam controller.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, that's Valve.
Yeah.
Yeah. Lord Gaben and his Knights of the Half-Life.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
So, let's see. Mac has three letters in it, so Half-Life 3 confirmed.
Yeah. Well, technically, it's Macintosh, but...
Well, that's three syllables, so yeah. Half-Life 3 still confirmed.
Yeah, one of these days that's going to happen. If we end up being right about that, that's going to be a lot.
Yeah, that will be what puts us on the map.
Yeah.
Yeah, anyways. Talk about this next one, Pat.
Recent statement. Exceed Games President Ken Berry, or Vice President Ken Berry, talked with Operation Rainfall, pretty much declaring the company's solidarity with PlayStation Vita. If you look at what they've got planned and what they've been doing lately, it's really no surprise, but it's nice to see that that they're really staying the course, and there's just kind of this small collective of really solid RPG developers and localization houses that are doing what Sony honestly ought to be doing.
Yeah.
And, you know, they were the reason the PSP lasted as long as it did, and they're going to be the reason the PlayStation Vita persists.
Yeah. Yep.
And this is a real case of, like, a bunch of small companies who know their market, know their audience, and are basically saying, okay, this system, it's more than enough for what we want to do. Even if Sony doesn't really care to support it, it's the platform we want to build on, and it's not going to cost us a heck of a lot of money to do it. And that's where we're going to be. Yeah.
And the fans are already there.
Yeah. know, most of the JRPG fans pretty much have PlayStation Vitas, so you know, it makes a lot of sense to me for them to just double down on it and bring out their games there.
Yeah, it's just one of those nice feel good stories.
Yeah.
The right games going to the right places.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Which I guess is a pretty good time to jump into our main discussion topic, which is games going to the wrong places.
Yeah.
Okay, so we alluded to earlier about microtransactions in $60 games. We are seeing way too much of that now.
Yeah.
It was, you know, earlier on in the last couple of years, it was kind of onesie twosie. You might see it. You saw it in Forza 5 and then Microsoft's Rise and Crimson Dragon mm-hmm. had them. Basically, their launch lineup. But they kind of walked away from those.
Yeah.
And now we're seeing big companies like, Konami with Metal Gear Solid 5. Let's see. Mm-hmm. Ubisoft is doing it with Far Cry Primal and Assassin's Creed Syndicate. What else is going on? Yeah, Star Wars Battlefront is allegedly going to have $50 DLC packages in there.
Yeah. What about Rise of the Tomb Raider?
Yeah, Rise of the Tomb Raider has like a card system where you could earn your cards if you want, or you could just buy them. And there's like 300 different card packs and stuff that you can pick up in there.
Yeah.
It seems to me like this is getting a little out of control. I don't believe that
a little
microtransactions that really don't add anything and basically just lock modes and whatnot behind paywalls are really acceptable if you're paying $60 to get in to begin with.
And let's be honest, the industry has really no one else to blame but itself.
Yeah,
no, that's not true. The industry has to blame its own consumers. The fact that they're doing this stuff means that people are buying it.
Like, yeah,
I think
true.
The thing that anytime I see this conversation brought up, but I always feel like it's missed, is that they wouldn't be doing this if it wasn't making the money.
Right.
This is an industry that we know has attempted for years to try and do everything that they can to chisel more money out of the people that pay them. And what is worse is that they've created this sort of like Stockholm syndrome with gamers who feel like if they don't support these models that are completely anti-consumer and completely against their best interest, that all of a sudden games will stop being made. And so there are people out there that do fall into this. Like, well, I want to make sure like this is the – like look at what you guys were talking about a few minutes ago with Panzer Dragoon. There is definitely a market for a game like that. So people would obviously want to throw money at it to try and make sure that more games like that get made. Hell, I bought Dragon Quest Heroes and I haven't even played that damn thing yet because – I want to support Dragon Quest. So I'm out on one hand. I think I'm also part of that problem. We're also at a time, though, when it comes to this stuff.
Well, that was a case where Square Enix explicitly said,
yeah,
they said Dragon Quest Heroes is going to form our position on Dragon Quest standing in the West.
Right.
That was a little more brazen, I would say.
Yeah, because Dragon Quest Heroes resembles the mainline Dragon Quest series in so many ways.
Oh, yeah. It's completely like what you'd expect.
Yeah.
No, but like, so we have that sort of like sideways thing where you have developers that are like, look, you got to buy this one thing so we can hopefully do another. But then you also have this stuff. Like, one of the things that you guys constantly hear me harp on is how little time I have. Yeah. And I'll never forget this. I saw it on NeoGAF when somebody mentioned the microtransactions in AC Syndicate. They said something like, okay, so I can basically pay money to not play your game and actually have it work the way it's supposed to. Yeah, I'm not even going to buy this at all. And that made a lot of sense to me because to have that microtransaction right there to say, we're putting this there to save you time. If you don't have the time to do this, you can pay money. To me, that says immediately, you already padded this out anyway. Mm-hmm. So you made it probably five times longer than it needs to be just because you want to push people in that microtransaction direction.
Yeah. Yeah.
You have and what's worse is that we have so many developers these days that are cutting out things that used to be part of games. And look, I get it. Budgets, blah, 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 whatever. That's not really relevant to me with the way that I kind of view this stuff. Because, perfect example, Arkham Knight's DLC is hot garbage.
Yep.
And people paid $40 for it. And if you look at all of the reviews for the DLC, no one is happy with it. Yeah. Not one person is happy with it that paid $40 for it. But I would love to see what WB's budget and everything was, number one, for this DLC, and then to turn around and see their profit sheet for how much they made. Yeah. The fact is that we live with this industry, and they will make things that will make money. You cannot expect any of these companies, I think, for the most part, with the exception of one or two, to be decent, because they're all about the bottom line. Yeah. And these microtransactions show it. And the worst part is that this stuff is only happening because it is making money. They know they can't raise prices on games. They know if they get past that $60 threshold, people just won't buy it at all. But the idea is that they get people in at that $60 price point. They enjoy the game, or they're starting to, and then they see something like a season pass or something else like that. People will tend to jump on that because they don't look at the overall price. They don't go, okay, I just spent $60 on this, and this season pass is $20. So that actually brings the total price of the game up to $80. They just go, oh, well, the season pass is $20. I guess that's just $20. They're not looking at it as like the total price of everything. And that's where I think that this has sort of been able to kind of slip through the cracks in really sort of an insidious way, because it doesn't look like you're getting nickel and dimed.
Yeah.
You know, because no one is actually adding it to the original price. And I'll put myself out on a limb here and say that I believe that when it comes to DLC, a lot of DLC is stuff that they were working on that didn't come together quite the way that they wanted to. And instead of it being something that they're just like, well, we lost the man hours on that, they can turn around and sell it. And the bar is so low that people are okay with it. Perfect example of going back to Arkham Knight is the Batgirl stuff. That's garbage. It's hot garbage.
Yeah.
And all they did is they reskinned Batman as Batgirl, and they gave her Nightwing's moveset or Robin's moveset.
Yeah.
And they were able to sell that, I think, for $8 individually. So even if – I don't know how many – do we know how many sales Arkham Knight has had? Does anybody know?
Yeah, it's in the. I think it's past 4 million now.
Okay, so let's say out of that 4 million, what, let's say 500,000 buy that at $8? How much money is that?
Yeah, that's several million dollars right there.
Yeah, you know? but let's just assume that that really wasn't up to snuff anyway. Let's do the math. That's $3,995,000.
Yeah.
So, and that's just 500,000 people buying that. So let's change that map up again. So 40 times 500,000 is $20 million.
Yeah.
So even if a small subset of gamers are doing this, it means so much money for these companies. And that's why they do it. That's why DLC is built into the project plan. I mean, I'm sure you guys remember the old Halcyon days where an expansion was actually an expansion. It was, we finished the main thing. Now let's figure out something else. Let's do something else that's cool.
Yeah.
You know, that's not what this is anymore. It's, I really believe that a lot of this stuff is, well, we didn't know what to do with this, or this was stuff that we had left over, you know, when we were designing the game, and now we can sell it back to you. I think very few developers do anything that's remotely cool. And then I think, like in Ubisoft's case, I would imagine, like, again, I work in software. So one of the things that we also see here in the software industry is you will give, there's all kinds of things like called like Project 48 Hour and stuff like that, where they will give people, look, you got 2 days, make something just completely bananas, right?
Yeah.
And you can look at Ubisoft's DLC for like the Assassin's Creed game. All that stuff strikes me as a Project 48 Hour type thing, like the stuff with Syndicate. Well, what if we had you chasing Jack the Ripper? How cool would that be? Or, you know, what if, you know, we have this time period where you're running around on a ship and we know slavery is a big deal. What if we did this from the viewpoint of an ex-slave? Oh, okay. Aveline. Hell, that whole Assassin's Creed game from that was on the Vita strikes me as a Project 48 Hour type thing, you know? And I wonder if half this stuff is just that, and they're monetizing ideas and possible failures that they wouldn't have gotten any money out of before.
Yeah, I think that's probably, you know, probably a big part of it. I mean, another part of it is, you know, these companies, especially like, you know, Ubisoft, Warner, and Activision and all of them, because they're, you know, publicly held companies, they have to have quarter-to-quarter growth. The investors absolutely want that, and they have to have that basically for every single game that they put out. So that's why we're seeing these kinds of, you know, ridiculous practices, because, you know, for
because
them...
Because capitalism, that's why.
Yeah, yeah, but I'm saying, like, for them, the shelf life of a game is 9 months. They have to milk everything they can out of that game and make it a continual, you know, growth for those 9 months. After that, they don't care anymore. That's why you see Game
of the Years.
I actually
think it's less.
You know, it could be. I mean, that's why you see Game of the Year editions coming out like 6 months after the game comes out.
Yeah, well, not just that. Look at how quickly those kinds of games drop to the $40 range or the $30 range. I mean, we know Assassin's Creed because it's been this way every year.
Yeah.
We know that Assassin's Creed will be $20 or $30 during Black Friday.
Yeah.
And so that's the other part of it too, is that, you know, I think probably for not just the quarter to quarter growth issue, but I wonder if the other reason they built this stuff in is maybe they're also still trying to hit that $60 price point. Maybe they have analytics that say half of our games aren't even being sold until it hits $40.
Yeah.
So we got to make that up somehow.
Yeah.
You know, which I think then the obvious solution is that you're pricing it wrong.
Yeah.
But,
definitely.
You know, that's a different story.
Yeah.
And then I think there's, like, on the other side of this, there's as I've been thinking about this with NetherRealm and the Mortal Kombat 10 Easy Fatality DLC that they've put out, I think they deliberately made the kind of DLC that nobody would actually want to buy, so that they could go up to management and say, "Well, see, these microtransactions don't work."
Yeah, that's possible.
You know,
that would be awesome.
I wouldn't put it past Ed Boon, really.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That is true. I mean, the man can be, well, combative.
With a K.
Yeah, but how many people...
Waka waka waka!
That's the other thing. Like, even if they could put out something as, like, a stealth, like, DLC, like, people aren't going to buy just any old thing,
yeah.
Somebody bought that shit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's the same reason people bought horse armor. You know, like, it doesn't serve any actual purpose, but there are people out there that are like... Like, to go back to the price thing that I talked about a few minutes ago, well, it's $2.
Yeah.
It's $5. Like, not looking at, like, what does this mean for my overall price point of this game?
Yeah.
Like, that's why I didn't buy a Mortal Kombat 10 from the outset, because I know there's a Game of the Year edition. As much as it pains me, I'm not going to buy Fallout. I love Fallout. I'm not buying it on day one.
Yeah.
Because
the Game of the Year edition of Mortal Kombat 10 might only include the first combat pack, though.
Yeah.
Because there has been a second one announced.
Yeah.
Whatever.
So we'll see.
But yeah, I mean, like, and the thing is that Bethesda, I think, actually puts out a DLC that's worth playing.
Yeah.
But, you know, that, again, they would not, this is the same industry that can sell 3 maps for $15.
Yeah.
I mean, people have shown that once they're invested in a game, they will get kind of stupid with their money.
Mm-hmm. You know, and I think that that's, even though most DLC out there is tantamount to your dog running up to you wanting to show you what it made for you.
Yeah, but see, the other thing too is that I think that they're also taking not advantage. That's not the right word, because that sounds like it's, like, you know, sinister. But I think what they're doing is that when you see these kinds of microtransactions, I don't think that stuff is really pointed at people like us. I think it's pointed at the people that buy 3 games a year. So they're not going to really bat an eye at, okay, my overall price that I spent on this game is $120. I mean, that's the Call of Duty model.
That was their splurge anyway.
Yeah, that's the Call of Duty model. It's, okay, we know eventually we're going to have 20 maps. We're going to ship the game with 7. And then we're going to sell the rest to them.
Yeah.
And that works every single time for them. Now, of course, we know there's been, you know, somewhat of a diminished return now. It seems like it's selling less and less each year. But that is their model. And I know plenty of people in real life who play 1 or 2 games a year. But they will come out for a Call of Duty at a midnight release. They'll buy it. They will buy a $20, $30, $40 season pass. They'll do all of that stuff.
Yeah.
Because to them, they're not looking at, like, a net total of, like, oh, well, I spent – $1,000 on games this year. This is the game. You know, they buy their games in the fall.
Yeah.
That's it. They're not interested in anything else.
Yeah.
So that also could be, you know, these companies monetizing the casual crowd, because we've shown that, you know, the hardcore crowd in a certain way really kind of won't buy what they say they'll buy. Like, if the hardcore crowd was to really be believed about how much they want things, we would already have Dragon Quest 7 and 8 over here.
Yeah.
On
3DS. Mm. So, and you know, that to that point, did you guys hear what Square said, where they're thinking about crowdfunding to get certain games over here? Like, on one hand, I was like, you know what? If that would mean, like, I could get Dragon Quest 7 and 8 on the 3DS, okay. But on the other hand, it's like, fuck you, Square. How much money do you actually have? And then now you want us to basically pay for the localization? Like,
yeah.
I don't know. Like, that's something else that really makes me wonder about the industry overall, where everyone is so averse to risk in general that they want to offset the risk to everyone. Is gaming, as far as a product that can be sold, is it so monetarily toxic that nothing small can exist anymore? We know that's not true because of the indie scene, but the indie scene is only supporting, like, when people make a game, it's 5 or 10 people. We have these behemoths like Ubisoft who put 1,000 people on a yearly game.
Yeah.
You know, I just think it's too big. Yeah, I think that's the problem.
Yeah.
And that's what we're coming up on. So it's going to be the whole show me the money era.
Mm. Yeah.
Buy the game and then we'll make it for you.
Yeah.
Well, that's one of the reasons I've been so weird about Kickstarter as well. Like, we've talked about this before. I have never Kickstarted anything because, to me, that's just a 3-year pre-order. Mm, like, you know, and I don't know. I find the whole thing really kind of scummy. And what's weird about it is this – I can't think of another industry that this is happening in. You know, like, nobody – like, you don't see Paramount going, well, we know you want, you know, whatever movie. Can you buy the tickets ahead of time? And by ahead of time, we mean like 3 years.
Oh, there was the Veronica Mars.
You know, we're good for it.
Yeah, there was that. Didn't that fail, though? Or no, there's something else that failed. There's something else that failed and they did. But but yeah, I'm tired of microtransactions. It's very difficult for me to look at the industry in a lot of ways and feel like they care.
Yeah.
Or that they want to do something, because you might have developers behind this that want to make something good, but they still have to deal with the publishers, and the publishers don't give a shit. They want that $40 DLC and everything else like that.
I mean, that's exactly what happened with Metal Gear Solid 5.
Oh, I know. That's just disgusting, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Hmm. Though fortunately, at least the actual, like, the microtransactions aren't actually something that can really affect the game negatively. It's more optional.
But they're still there, and it's still it just makes you feel scummy that, you know, a game that is as good as Metal Gear Solid 5 was and could have been is just sullied by the fact that they're even there.
Right.
Yeah.
Or to take the thing with Assassin's Creed, it's if you put the microtransactions out there immediately, that you know that this will speed things up, doesn't that tell you that they base the gameplay around trying to frustrate you enough to make you pay more money?
Yeah, well, it's the mobile the mobile mentality. I mean, a lot of free-to-play games and mobile do exactly that. They'll put things behind time gates or put things just out of reach of your resources just so, you know, to prompt you for that purchase.
Yeah, hell, WoW put that in with the garrison system where it's just like, okay, come back later. Like, they did that. Like, there's a reason why people have been talking about how Blizzard, you know, has basically made an MMO browser game. Because aside from the rating, everything else is dumb shit. You go to a table and you click on buttons and you come back 8 hours later and you get a reward. That's like a fucking gumball machine that takes your quarter, but you have to come back tomorrow.
After it specifically crafts your one-of-a-kind gumball.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, I think it's bad, and I think that this is going to be the kind of thing, like, I think the right way to do it is like what Capcom is doing. You produce a base, or what Blizzard did with Heroes of the Storm, or any MOBA in general. You produce a base, you give people things to buy, and they can buy into the level that they want. Killer Instinct's another good example. But creating a game that is intentionally designed to not only charge you $60, but then also probably frustrates you to the point where then you'll pay more money to just not be frustrated.
Mm-hmm.
That you would kick someone in the dick on the street if they did that to you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
All right. I think we got a show.
Yeah, I do believe we do. With that, I am Filippo DeNelfo.
I'm Patrick Mifflin.
I'm Brandon Perkins.
And I'm Lee Lamb.
And we'll see you all next week.
Later.
All right, guys. I'm going to go hang out with my family. My wife's leaving tomorrow to go camping, so I want to spend some time with her.
See ya.
Sorry I missed the last couple ones. I'm glad I can make this one.
Yeah.
Yeah.